Once upon a time, the morning of Sunday, March 11th, 1990, to be exact, a young newspaper reporter walked into the First Unitarian Universalist Church in Concord, Massachusetts, carrying his notebook, press pass, and a surly attitude. His assignment was to cover an appearance by the Reverend Laszlo Tokes, a minister of the Hungarian Reformed Church in Romania, who helped topple the dictatorship of Nicolae Ceausescu and end communist rule in Romania. It was a great assignment. The Romanian Revolution was one of the top news stories of the late 80s and early 90s. This was one of Reverend Tokes's only U.S. appearances, and that 26-year-old reporter was getting a piece of it. But there was a catch, and the reason for the reporter's surly demeanor. The catch was that the reporter had to sit through a church service to get the story. And he didn't like church. He had left the church of his upbringing years before and had zero interest in another. After all, didn't they all just spew out variations on the same themes? Pray, pay, obey. You'll get pie in the sky when you die by and by. But this service was a little different. The children got a story instead of glares and muttered threats to keep still. The ministers talked about freedom and conscience and justice in this world, not promised rewards in the next, of pursuing the truth wherever it led. Not bad, the reporter thought. Still church, but not bad. To be continued. I see journeys in terms of stories. Stories are an essential part of human society. Anthropologists have known for generations that storytelling plays a vital role in disseminating essential knowledge and reinforcing common values. However, it's only within the last decade or so that advanced neuroscience has revealed how deeply storytelling is embedded in our anatomy and physiology. Eons of evolution have built a circuit of organic chemicals and neuropathways into our brains that are specifically for absorbing and responding to stories. Story narratives activate a chain reaction in our brains. They ignite what the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience calls a narrative hub between our brain's cortex, parietal, and temporal regions. Magnetic resonance imaging can see those parts of the brain fire when a subject listens to a story. The brain creates new neural pathways to commit stories to memory in a uniquely permanent way. We remember stories in a way we don't remember anything else. In 1980, a University of California research team found that when subjects read a narrative story, then an expository explanation that contained the same information, they could read the story twice as quickly, yet retain twice as much information. A piece of this storytelling neuroscience jumped out at me. The Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience article said that to really grab us and spark our story-absorbing physiology, stories have to be about people. Character-based stories release a hormone in our brain called oxytocin. It's often called the empathy hormone. Oxytocin promotes pro-social, empathetic behavior. It enables us to identify with the protagonist in a story, and it spurs us to take action based on what we feel. Think about that. Stories unlock evolutionary programming that compels us to care what happens to each other and to act on that caring. But the programming has discriminating tastes. The stories have to be genuine. They don't have to be epics like The Odyssey or The Lord of the Rings. They can be small, but they have to be real. The young newspaper reporter became an editor in Portsmouth. There, he heard about a charismatic minister of the same denomination he discovered when reporting that story in Concord. The editor's bias against church notwithstanding, he quickly gravitated not just to the minister, but to the whole denomination. It was open-minded where others seemed so rigid. It had the humility to say, we don't know, and the optimism to say, but we're going to keep searching. It was about being a good person in this life, not waiting for rewards in the next. There was, however, one thing about his new church that he couldn't reconcile. It often seemed to be a bit egocentric. So much of what he heard from the pulpit was personal experience and personal anecdote that he started to hear the Beatles song, I, Me, Mine, play in his head during services. Or he'd think of a movie scene where one character said to the other, listen to me talking about myself, me, 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 me. What about you? What do you think of me? It wasn't the search for larger truths he expected from religion. Some years later, he realized something he should have realized years before, that he didn't trust people who thought they possessed larger truths and, in fact, ran away from them, and that people telling stories about their personal searches for spiritual truth was that humility that he so admired, because they were exploring in the most genuine and honest way they could through their own experiences and through the reality of this life, what it meant to be spiritual. To be continued. The liberal comedian Patton Oswalt does not like our country's current chief executive, and makes that plain through his Twitter feed. Recently, one of Oswalt's tart remarks drew a reply from a man in Alabama who told Oswalt how happy he was to see Oswalt play a character in a movie who died. Oswalt first responded with a comedic jab, but then he read the man's Twitter feed, and he learned that his critic was a 65-year-old Vietnam War veteran named Michael Beatty, that Beatty had nearly died from sepsis and related health problems, that he spent months in the hospital in a coma, that he was buried in unpaid medical bills and had been reduced to starting a GoFundMe page to ask for donations from friends, family, and strangers. Oswalt then wrote to his 4.5 million Twitter followers, "This dude just attacked me on Twitter and I joked back. But then I looked at his timeline and he's in a lot of trouble health-wise. I'd be angry too. He's been dealt some lousy cards. Let's deal him some good ones. Click and donate, just like I'm about to." Oswalt donated $2,000, and within a few hours, his followers gave another $14,000, along with some comments. One said, "I'm a liberal who's a fan of Patton Oswalt, but I don't think vets should have to deal with medical issues. I wish I could contribute more. I'm a government contractor who's laid off with no chance of getting back pay from the furlough. Doesn't mean I can't try to help a little." Beatty wrote back to Oswalt, "You have humbled me to the point where I can barely compose my words. You've caused me to take pause and reflect on how harmful words from my mouth could result in such an outpouring." There's a holy beauty in this anecdote. Beatty's story reached over the internet and grabbed onto the fundamental humanity of people who didn't know him, would never meet him, and who hold beliefs radically opposed to his own. But when they saw him through his story as a human being in need and despair, their higher impulses of empathy and mercy and generosity overrode their politics. There's a lot of that holy beauty on the internet, of all places. I'm a bit of a YouTube fanboy. I didn't come out as a gay man until I was 39, and that made me curious about what younger gay men go through. I like hearing their stories, and that's how I found Mark and Ethan. Mark and Ethan are good-looking, upbeat Indiana farm boys who tell stories through video about not much. They walk their dog, cook meals, go on road trips, run their small business, hit the gym, ride their skateboards. Not exactly edge-of-the-seat stuff. I watch because I like that their optimism hasn't been dented by life yet, and it's just nice to see them enjoying each other. But when I read some of the comments their viewers write, I see them from a totally new perspective, and it gives me an appreciation for the divine and what's close. One wrote, "I'm still closeted, but you give me hope that my life is going to be wonderful and full of love and joy like I hope it will. Thank you so much for the videos." Another said, "I live in a European country that claims to have culture, but when it comes to gays, it's like the Middle East. You can lose everyone you love by coming out. I wish one day I could live like you're living right now. With you, I can see what I lose by staying here, so thank you from the bottom of my heart." And this one especially, "Thank God I'm not alone." These are small stories these young men tell, but those reactions aren't small. Neither are the reactions from viewers of a woman who posted stories about living with depression. One of her viewers wrote, "My parents do not understand, and my friends are gradually becoming strangers. I hurt every day, and the only hope I have is either in the experimental stage or illegal. My doctor says it will get worse as I grow older, and there's nothing more they can do. At least your story gives me some encouragement. Thank you." These people weren't comforted by angels bathed in a heavenly light, but by other people whose stories sparked a primal reaction of empathy and fellowship. It happened through the anonymous, faceless zeros and ones of binary code that travel along an electronic neuron that so often drowns us in triviality, infuriates us with stupidity, divides us with bigotry and lies and anger and venality, yet, can connect us, unify us, give us each other at our most genuine, our most human, and our most holy. This artificial creation of our intellects is a vehicle for the divine power of each other's stories. When we need each other the most, when we're at the end of our ropes, we've tied the knot and we're holding on, but what we really need to know is that someone somewhere has gone through what we're going through right now, and that they made it, and that there's something on the other side. Do you believe in a deity, a higher power, a transcendent life force, the oversoul, atheism, agnosticism? Where you use, you don't have to believe in any of those. But do you believe in what you can see, what science and your own experience tell you? Then you can believe that there is a divinity in our lives through our connection to each other. The proof is all around us. Our stories combined with our creation, that neuron of anonymous zeros and ones, that's a divine in the daily. The young journalist, who you've probably figured out by now was me, is no longer a journalist and certainly isn't young. Life's taken me in unexpected directions, but through it all, I stayed in the church, got involved, was asked to contribute, said yes, always said yes, sometimes said yes to things that made me feel uncomfortable, but I wanted to do my part and kept saying yes until, before I realized it, I finally said yes to something that I wasn't all that sure I could actually do. I've spoken in front of you plenty of times before, but it was always just for a minute or two. Not enough time to get nervous or to remember that I'm uncomfortable speaking to large groups and being the center of attention. And this time's different. I had to speak for longer and actually make a point. I tried to think of ideas for this sermon and remembered college papers coming back with comments like, "well written, but a bit superficial," or "misses the point, try again." I thought of stacks of novel manuscripts that meandered for hundreds of pages without actually ever getting anywhere. My demons tell me that I'm neither a very deep nor a very original thinker, that I'm a middle-aged hack writer with a shelf full of unfinished work, who has chronic depression, dodged his true sexuality for half his life, barely mastered his drinking problem, and still hasn't mastered his anger problem. Those demons ask me, "what do you think you have to offer, pal?" Well, all of that. Because it's my story, I'm not comfortable sharing it, I find a lot of it embarrassing. But maybe someone, somewhere, needs a story, needs my story, the way someone might need each of your stories. to spark that evolutionary circuit that helps them feel hopeful, a little bit stronger, that they can go on for another day, and most of all, that they're not alone. Put the story of your journey into the world. Be there for someone you don't know, who you'll never meet, but who, in the moment, needs your story, needs a divine being. You, us, together, in this life and this reality. To be continued.